Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of House Finance back to order. The time is 8:17 in the morning on Friday, May 16. And currently we have here Representative Stapp, Representative Jimmy, Representative Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Hannon, and I'm sure some more folks will stream in here. And we left off yesterday with SB 64, and we were we had just gone through the introduction of the bill, the slide deck. Also have with us Representative Galvin. I know is actually waiting earlier for the rest of us, so you're the early bird, I think. Thank you. And so we went through the introduction of the bill with the slide deck and also the sectional. We went through the sectional. So we were entertaining questions, and we'll pick it up where we left off. And just as a reminder, if anyone would like to submit a written testimony, they can email us at house.finance@akleg.gov. And I'm actually kind of drawing this out just slightly to allow folks to make it back. We've got with us Representative Johnson as well. And so with that, we'll just jump right into questions. Let's see, I feel like I had a list, but I guess we shall start anew. Representative Stapp?
Sure. Yeah, through the chair to whomever who's not quite at the table yet. So I guess I'm going to start with, in section 12 on page 9, the rural community liaison. I don't think I have much of an issue with doing something like this, but I guess it says rural communities shall collaborate with tribes and municipalities to facilitate access to early and absentee voting in rural areas. State will ensure precincts in rural areas of the state are fully staffed. So my assumption is they should probably staff precincts in rural areas already. So maybe if you could articulate kind of what exactly we think is happening out there that would require us to have a special community liaison through the chair.
Point of information.
Okay. Sure. Got a point of information, Representative.
Page 9 of what?
The bill.
Representative
the bill.
Johnson.
Okay.
Page 9, line 1 through 5.
Probably said 9 of the section.
Page 9 of the bill.
And before we jump into answering the question, I just want to also recognize that we have with us Representative Allard. And then after we go to Representative Stapp, I think we left off yesterday with the next question. It was to Representative Allard from last night. And any other people to be added to the list? Okay. And so, Mr. Densmore and Ms. Kawasaki, if you can put yourself on the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, David Densmore, staff to Senator Wilikowski.
Good morning, members of the committee. Sonia Kawasaki, Senate Majority Legal Counsel.
And we've also got with us Representative Bynum. Mr. Densmore, question to you.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Representative Stapp, the rural community liaison position was requested by the Alaska Federation of Natives. Staffing voting in rural Alaska has been a particular challenge, and there's unique challenges that aren't faced in urban Alaska. For one, the having the redundancy is harder if in a urban community with multiple precincts, if you have one poll worker call in sick, you can, you know, potentially move someone from another precinct or have someone from the division regional office come help staff that precinct. But if you have that issue in a rural precinct, that becomes harder. And often, you know, you literally have polling places not open for many hours because of having trouble finding a last-minute replacement. Or in some elections, there have been some villages where the precincts didn't open at all. And if the Division of Elections is online, they can speak to some of the efforts they've made in the last cycle that they In the last general election, I believe they actually were able, not everything opened on time, but they were able to make sure every polling place in the state did open this cycle, which was an improvement. But the idea behind the Rural Community Liaison is because this is staffing voting in rural Alaska has been identified as an area that's challenging and needs preparation to make sure you have staff recruited and trained that to have a full-time position dedicated to addressing those issues will help us be better prepared and ensure that voting is accessible in all regions of the state.
And would like to note, we also have with us Representative Tomaszewski, and then also just for folks' knowledge, we have online Genevieve Wachutsik, Director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division. And we have Michaela Thompson, a Division Operations Manager for Division of Elections. And finally, Carol Beecher, Director of Division of Elections. And then in the queue after Representative Stapp, I've got Representative Allard, Representative Bynum. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to put on record that I have a handout that's coming out in regards to the special needs ballot. And it came straight from the Lieutenant Governor's office on behalf of the Department of Division of Elections.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Representative Stapp, I believe Mr. Densmore had answered the question.
Follow up. I mean, so the position in the fiscal notes are range 16. So I guess that's not very high if we're trying to hire someone, especially if we're already having staffing issues. So I think it would be good to hear from Division of Elections just to articulate to us kind of what they've done to ensure that we don't have issues like we had, I believe, in Nuiqsut that didn't. Was it Anaktuvuk Pass or one of these, a couple of these precincts on the North Slope Borough for the primary election, I think, didn't even open on time. So I'm just curious if they could articulate that and what they think about this position, if they would be able to hire it, and if it helps solve their issue, through the chair.
Sure. Ms. Carol Beecher, can you put yourself on the record?
Good morning. This is Carol Beecher, Director of the Alaska Division of Elections. Through the Chair, Representative Stapp, in the primary election, there were several precincts that didn't open due to the precinct or the polling workers not being available on that day. And what the division has experienced is that we do have our range 16s generally are the ones that are helping with the staffing of any of the polling places for all of the regions. In region 4, the agreements for staffing the polling places take place usually in the summertime, and there are agreements that are signed. However, when we get up to polling day, we have encountered things where usually this is very last minute, where in one case the person had gone fishing, in another case they had to go to Anchorage for something, and we didn't find out about these things until the afternoon before election or the day of the election. So then there is a huge scramble to try to find somebody available in that community who will step in and work the polls. What we did for the general election in anticipation to try to make sure that we were able to staff and open all polls, We had an agreement with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. We trained staff from their group, and we sent them out to the various hub communities to have them ready should we hear that there were no poll workers on election day, to travel out to that location from those hub places to open those polls. So we did send two individuals out to Egigik because there was no one there who was able or willing to work the polls. We also found out on the morning of the election day that the individual who was signed up and supposed to work for the Wales community was not going to be available. So we wanted to send out two individuals who were in Nome and ready to go at the airport to fly out to Wales, but the weather closed in and they were not able to do that. So we were able to find a school teacher who was willing to open the polls at 4 o'clock. So to your question of whether or not a rural liaison would help, possibly, but in the end it comes down to that the communities that have the poll workers, it really is partly dependent on the communities being engaged and wanting to have individuals who are willing to work the polls, and that has been a challenge for us in some of these communities of making sure that the ones who have signed up and said that they would do the work are there on election day. So whether or not this position would actually be able to assist with that, we could certainly hire people, we can train them, we can work with them, but in the end we can't make sure that they are there on election day. So that's why we went to this contingency plan of having the basically standby workforce to be able to fly out to those communities to make sure that at least the polls are open on that day, if not at 7 a.m.
And on that note, I just want to say a few of those communities were in my district this past election, and I was made aware of on the day of the election when some of the polls couldn't open, and Division of Elections was scrambling to try to make sure that folks are available so that the community could vote that day. And I was just very appreciative of the efforts that were made. And also, it was mentioned that DMVA was out in Nome, which I just happened to run into them and wondered what they were doing in Nome. And they said that they were trained and they're ready to go and they could fly out. They're stationed in Nome and they could fly out at a moment's notice if there is a need. And I was just very appreciative to see that effort. But I also realized that there's the challenge, too, because we have over 200 villages in the state. So I think you're going to do a follow-up, Representative Stapp.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Real quick, I thought I heard you say Igigik as opposed to Igiagik. People get those confused all the time. Assume it is Igigik. The DMVA folks, were those Defense Force people, or there's actually DMVA people? And then my second question is, you mentioned you got a teacher in Wales. Lots of great teachers in Wales, by the way. I'm just curious if that's maybe an avenue that you pursue going forward, irrespective of the bill, because there is a school, and I know every community with teachers, and if that's an area that you were able to kind of last-minute fill a poll worker, that might be something that provides good utility going forward. So just those things through the chair.
Ms. Beecher?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I'm sorry, can you repeat your first question?
Igigik versus Igiagik, through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I may be pronouncing it wrong, but it's Igigik, E-G-E, not the I-G, was the community where we deployed the two individuals. And the individuals that were stood up from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs were, to my understanding, they were the regular staff. This was not any kind of the military force or individuals or anything like that.
And the last one regarding trying to use school districts more with teachers, through chair.
Ms. Beecher.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Stapp, we have not explored that. Usually elections fall on a school day, or often do on a Tuesday, and in this case, this teacher was not able to work those polls until 4 o'clock. And so it is certainly something that we could look into. We have not at this juncture looked into recruiting from school teachers.
Thanks.
Okay. On the list, I have Representative Allard, Johnson, and Bynum. Representative Allard.
Thank you. I'm just going to follow up what Representative Stapp had said. I do think it's important because we saw the difference out in your community, Representative Foster. I'd like to also add, and I think this is great, that since the DMVA was out there, we do have people already on a paid volunteer basis for the Alaska State Defense Force. These are educated, nice people. And if we have any out in that community, volunteering to do that would be great. I know that in my community, they volunteer to do things like that too. So I'm just going to put that out there, and I think it's a lovely amendment coming down the line.
Thank you. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was actually right on the same page, saying was going to say something about the Statehood Defense Force, or really the question is there no prohibition but to having a cooperative effort with other state employees in the area?
Ms. Beecher.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I believe. The division currently does use state employees to work polls, so there is no prohibition for using state employees for this purpose if they're willing. They still get paid their daily rate and then of whatever their salary is when they do this, and then we pay them the full worker hourly rate on top of that.
All right, thank you.
Representative Bynum, and then I'll come to myself and Representative Hennen.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Back to this question on Section 12, is that rural community liaison position. You know, I appreciate the idea that of saying that we really need somebody to be looking at these types of issues, and from listening to the department, it sounds like that's obviously something high on your mind and you're trying to find solutions. We also have another section in this bill, Section 57, that talks about doing an evaluation and a report to look at how we can get better responses in rural communities and in low-income neighborhoods, but specifically about the rural communities. Can you talk, Ms. Beecher, a little bit about what you're currently actually doing to address this issue? And this requirement in 57, which is linked to Section 12, are those things that you're actively currently doing, and by having this in statute would just be codifying basically what you're already doing?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, so in regards to the Section 57 that speaks to the providing the early voting and the rural community, we are actively looking at some really innovative, at least innovative for us, ideas of seeing if there are ways for us to be able to transmit election results so that we could have the entire ballot instead of just the calling in. So, for example, the ability to scan. For early voting, which for the division's vernacular is different than absentee in-person voting, a person who goes into early vote puts their ballot into the scanner, and the results are kept in there until we tally that on election night at 8 o'clock. We are not able to do that without the ability to have the scanners out there in multiple locations. So the early voting itself is actually quite limited because of bandwidth issues, because of the scanners, and because of the staffing. But we are looking at something with Starlink potentially and other ideas that are out there where we may have something in the middle of summer that we can look at that might be a great solution for our far-flung communities for providing that service.
Appreciate that. It's good to hear that the department is at least considering that these are issues and that you're working on them. Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The issue of getting volunteers is obviously that's an issue for anything that we're doing, whether you're trying to get people to run for elected office or just show up on a Saturday to do activities in the community. What is the department's primary role in trying to get volunteers? Well, actually, they're not even volunteers, if I'm not mistaken. Actually, our election workers are actually paid positions. What are we actually doing to try to get ahead of that for this next upcoming election, knowing that having folks not show up is a major problem for people to vote?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, traditionally what has been the process, it's been calling on the individuals who have worked a previous election. And then, if possible, then those chairpersons of the poll workers, usually we try to have four for each precinct, they then contact other individuals who will be the poll workers for them. And then we schedule training. Training occurs throughout the summer for our rural precincts. We fly them into the hub communities to perform in-person training. So usually the poll workers are all lined out and scheduled for working both the primary and the general election, and oftentimes the REAA elections, if there's an REAA election in that area, in the summertime. For what we're finding is that we have, since COVID, really struggled with getting some of those workers who are often retirees and older folks. We lost a lot of people who were not able to work anymore on the polls during that. So since that time, I think it's been more of a struggle to find individuals who will work. And this is not isolated to our rural communities. This is all of our communities where we had to recruit newer people. I believe that for our rural communities, that one of the things that we plan to try for this upcoming election in 26 is expanding the notification that we are looking for poll workers and not just leaving it to the poll workers to try to find people. So doing things like putting it on Facebook, putting out radio announcements that, hey, if you're interested in working the polls, please contact us. I think that we have not done as much outreach as we could potentially to try to get more people who then would be aware that this is a need for us.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Maybe we'll go to Representative Hannon and then to myself. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Ms. Beecher, could you just expand slightly on the training that you have for poll workers in the summer, the length of time? And I guess I'm thinking of, when we talk about volunteers for the November election, it's actually not as simple as just walk in and volunteer. There's some complexity to it. And especially if we're talking about finding people who are there in November but having to train them in August, there's probably a big disconnect. So how long is that training for poll workers that you conduct?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, in the areas like Anchorage, the training is usually a four-hour block, depending on what they're doing. I believe, and I confess I am not an expert on the amount of training. I do have Michaela, who could probably expand more on this. But the standard is usually a four-hour training block. And then if they are, depending what other tasks they're doing for our urban communities, there may be the individuals that would go on as the chairpersons for to make sure that they have the extra training on the extra activities that are required by them. I know that when we do the training for our rural areas, we also have the requirement, particularly in our Toyokuk areas, which are mostly the Yupik languages, for the bilingual outreach. So we have a separate component of our training there that's done in person, and when they fly into the hub communities, it's usually a full day or a day and a half of training, and that has part of that has to do with the bilingual training where they try to interact with each other on practicing if someone comes in and doesn't understand how to fill out the ballot, what kinds of things they can practice saying back and forth. And we also have then a workshop for actually handling the tablets that we use that have the languages on them and for the disabled to use on actually how to plug it all in, get it set up, get it started, because it's only every 2 years, every other year, I should say, and it's a lot of things to remember and easily forgotten, and there's a lot of plugs and cords and things. So doing hands-on training to make sure that they completely understand that and how to set it up is also a big part of the training for all of the precincts.
One follow-up. Representative Hannon. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And Ms. Beecher, when you made the effort to hire or to position DMVA employees to be able to go out, did you do a specific training for them separate than the other trainings, or did you just have those people come to a training you were already conducting in Anchorage?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I believe it was in the middle of a very busy time, so I believe that we had them come in to our offices in Anchorage, which is where they came out of. I believe it either was in person, I believe, or they may have just had them take. We have online training as well for when we can't do in person. They may have all just taken the online. I'm not sure on that, but I could follow up and let you know that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Chair Foster.
Thank you. I just wanted to speak to the value of the rural community liaison. You can train folks and plan as much as possible for all the contingencies. But boy, come election day, and I was more aware of kind of what happened over the past two elections, and to see how kind of crazy I think things can get. I appreciate having this person, whether or not that person is a new position or if it's an existing position. I guess I couldn't speak to that, but I did want to speak to. I realize that we've got five regions in the state. The headquarters, you've got Juneau, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Nome, and Wasilla. And Nome alone covers a huge geographic swath. We've got, it goes from all the way from Ukiavik to Kotzebue, Nome, Bethel, down to Dillingham and all communities in between. And as I mentioned earlier, we've got over 200 small communities in the state. And if you've got, four or five communities that on election day all of a sudden you've got issues, it's really nice to have somebody who can, not just be there to help find, and get the person that you had as a backup up and going, but to ensure that, all the materials, because usually there's an election bag that has to be transferred over. Everything has to be done securely. You have to make sure that, these people, you aren't just calling up, random people and saying, hey, can you open up the polling station for the day? Just so many little things that have to happen. And as Ms. Beecher mentioned, on the day that Wales had issues, the weather was bad, and so what do you do in that situation? And Ms. Beecher's got, as I mentioned, five different regions that, you're trying to manage all the things that are happening on that one day. And so if you've got one person who can really kind of not just focus on some of these other areas, but also have the contacts and the relationships built up beforehand, then I think that's just very helpful. So, Representative Bynum?
Thank you. Co-Chair Foster, yeah, I think having creating a rural community liaison position in the division is a very helpful thing to have. My question, I guess, for Ms. Beecher would be is would it be anticipated that with this position that person would be effectively readily available to do all of the technical correspondence from the division perspective during an election day leading up to the day of the election day? I know with low orbit satellite type systems for communication, expansion of fiber throughout our communities, that communications capabilities are well expanded from what they have been in the previous decade. Would that be a partial intention of this position? And are you already anticipating you doing that in the upcoming election?
Ms. Beecher?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, we currently have technical type individuals who are very familiar with the equipment that are basically in some of our hubs, who are available for any of the kind of phone calls on troubleshooting for the machinery and any kind of the electronic stuff. So we already have that in place. And I can tell you on the election day, they tend to be very busy just troubleshooting these cords. We need this, how it's doing this. That already do that kind of work.
Follow up? I guess my question also would be to the technical aspect of running the election. I know that on election day, things happen where you have a local election worker. Maybe they're not as they get training, but they're not experienced long-term election people. And so sometimes they have questions that they need to have answered really pretty quick. Is the department readily available to answer technical questions as far as what to do with the ballots, if there's a weird situation that comes up where they need guidance? Is the department going to be readily available for our remote communities, rural communities, in those instances.
Ms. Beecher?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, the current process is that the poll workers, we have been in communication with them on the fairly often, frankly, on the weeks leading up to the elections, because we need to know that they have their materials. They report back to us. There's a checklist. They go through the things they do to get everything set up. So we already have pretty regular communication with them from the regional level. And the process currently has been that when they have any kind of problem or anything, that they call into their region, and we have people there who are answering the phone during that day to deal with any kinds of questions. We have not, at this juncture, fleshed out exactly all of the mechanics and the roles, responsibilities of this position for an election day scenario like you suggested. I would anticipate that that this person would also be made available as part of that group of people available for technical questions like that.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions? Representative Jimmy?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and through the chair. Good morning, Ms. Beecher. Thank you for being here with us today. My question is, when was the Division of Elections last sued for violating the Voting Rights Act in relation to language assistance for Indigenous voters?
Ms. Beecher?
Through the chair, I'm sorry, Representative Jimmy, could you please repeat your question?
Yes. When was the Division of Elections last sued for violating the Voting Rights Act in relation to language assistance for Indigenous voters?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, I believe that the lawsuit was around 2012 when the Toya case, I believe it was 2012. I can confirm that, but I believe it was 2012.
And also to follow up
question,
What adjustments were made due to the outcome of that case?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, as a result of that lawsuit, the state is in a settlement status with the court. It's a continuing settlement, and every couple of years we go back to court and discuss any kind of changes or anything to that settlement. It's very prescriptive, has a lot of different defined requirements for the division as regards provision of the Yupik language and the dialects that are required under the 203, and then expands on those for those areas under the purview of that court case.
Last question.
Sure, Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Does the settlement remain in effect past 2026?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, yes, it does. It's an ongoing settlement at this point.
Thank you so much for answering.
Okay. And we do have a 9 a.m. Other meeting, so we'll be adjourning out in a few minutes. Representative Bynum?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Section 18 of the bill talks about informing voters of language assistance availability. I was looking in here to just verify the other sections of this bill that would address the particular issue that was just brought up. I don't know that I see it readily offhand, but I'll try to make a note of it. My question is for the division, is specifically when we talk about accessibility of language literature information, ballot information, what kind of coordination is the division happening right now with our rural communities, but specifically with the tribes here in Alaska? It would be very nice to understand what that relationship looks like, what kind of communication we're having with the tribes.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, so the division, as a result of the Toyokut case, we have a language program where we have a language manager, coordinator, we have a translator, and then we are in the process of hiring for an outreach coordinator in that specific language management group. And what we do in relation to the tribes and to the different municipalities under the Toyokut umbrella is reach out to them to find translators. If we don't get recommendations from them, then we also seek out the various, so we've contacted colleges, we contact the communities, people who know people, to get the translators, we have to have a certain amount of translators available to translate the materials. And this process is basically year-round, but we have a glossary of Yupik in the various dialects, often looking at that again to update it to make it more clear for an election year. Things like an initiative have to be translated into the different dialects, and the official election pamphlet that goes out to that region has to be translated into the dialect if we can do that. If not, I know that in the election last year for 2024, it was only translated into BBYG, Bristol Bay Yupik, and General Central Yupik, and those are then mailed out. It's an enormous amount of labor that is done by the individuals who step up to do the translation work, and we really appreciate them for the hours of work that they do. It's kind of a continuing to answer your question on the relationship with the division and the tribes. We have many different ways that we reach out to them, letting them know that we need these and the materials are sent to them, et cetera. So it's kind of an ongoing communication to them.
Follow up.
Thank you. With that being said, obviously when we as appropriators provide money in our budgets for the division, and we're saying we need to be able to comply with federal law, are now going a step further saying we need to put something in statute because it's not there. Is the department actually, are you cataloging or able to articulate in a written report or information to us to tell us effectively what you're actually doing to comply with federal law, who you're talking with and coordinating with on the for tribal consultation, what kind of feedback we're actually getting through that process, is it working, and what other additional resources you need? Is that actually happening or is that available?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, the division is required as part of the Toyota settlement provisions to provide what is called the court report, and every year the division puts together the different outreaches, the responses, there's a lot of documentation that goes into that report to the court, and that is something that we do every year. So I believe that may answer the questions that you have as far as the tracking of what the division is doing with the language program, particularly as regards the Toyokut case. We do not provide a court report for the other 203 languages, which are the Inupiat and the Tagalog.
Does the and through the chair, does the department have a log or communication of from the tribes and from the communities of requests and or issues that are happening? So meaning, I'm hearing, you know, that there's potential problem here. And so I'm not clear that I'm hearing the department say that they are working to try to solve and or comply. But I'm also not hearing from tribes or have information from the tribes or communities that are saying, we have an issue here that we're trying to get communication from the department and we're not being heard. Do you guys have that information from the tribe saying that there's a complaint or a concern that consultation with the department isn't occurring in an effective way?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, we do send out surveys and take the information that we get from that when we hear back from them, but currently, we have not heard back, to my knowledge. I have a language manager. I could check with her to see if anything has come in this summer on any, or I should say this spring, anything like that. But we have not heard back in that there are complaints about the provision of the languages.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn out the meeting. We've got another meeting. Representative Johnson, did you have your hand up earlier? No, okay. So next up in the queue, I've got Representative Jimmy, and then I believe is it Representative Stapp for when we come back to this. As I mentioned, we've got another meeting to go to at 9, and then we've got floor at 10. For this afternoon's 1:30 meeting, we'll come back and we've got public testimony on two bills. That's HB 104, Address Confidentiality Program, HB 193, Unemployment Benefits, Paid Parental Leave. We do have HB 96, Home Care Employment Standards, and SB 64, Back to Elections. The order of those could potentially change, but I'm inclined to say that we need to at least take the public testimony, and we could abbreviate some of the other bill hearings to get back to the SB 64 elections bill. So with that, House Finance will be adjourned at 8:58 a.m. Thank you.